It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. There are new statistics out on poverty in Western Pennsylvania, and if not surprising, they are disappointing. According to the Urban Institute in Washington, the number of households below the poverty line has jumped nearly 2% since 2012. But those percentages don't include many households that cannot or can barely afford to pay bills and provide for their families, according to our guest, Maxwell King. He's president of the Pittsburgh Foundation, and he is among those working to solve this problem. He joins me now in studio. Maxwell King, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
It's great to be here.
You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is essspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at essspgh. Again, the number 412-246-2002. Maxwell King, just how big a problem is poverty in southwestern Pennsylvania?
I don't think it's a bigger problem than it is in the rest of the United States. But throughout the United States, it's been a growing problem for decades now. And it's growing here in Pittsburgh, too. In the last 15 years, poverty has grown, or the measures of poverty have grown by about 20%. In the United States, it's grown by about 30%. But it really goes all the way back to the 1970s, when this gap began to emerge between the top income earners and the bottom income earners, or the top quintile and the bottom two quintiles. And ever since the 1970s, with a brief respite in the 1990s, this has been growing. So there's been a growing divide between the top and the bottom. And it's now, I think, seen all around the country as a major issue. You hear the political candidates for president in both parties talking about the middle class and the working class and the working poor and what we can do to try to close down this divide a little bit.
There are statistics that just came out today about the unemployment rate in the United States. And I'm wondering, when we hear, for example, that the United States, the figure was, I believe it was 210,000 new jobs have been added to the economy, and the unemployment rate in the United States is now just above 5%, which sounds pretty good. But is that really masking a problem that you just alluded to, which is that we've got this income gap, and we may have statistics to show that people are employed, but if they are underemployed, if they're not making enough money to make ends meet, or they are having to work multiple jobs and having to find childcare for their family, that negates whatever gains they might make. Is that sort of another problem that isn't being dealt with directly?
You're exactly right, Paul. A lot of the problem is working poor. When you think about it, if you're making $10 or $12 an hour above the minimum federal minimum wage level, you're not making enough money to subsist on. The federal poverty level is set at $23,000 for a family of four, which I think is a complete joke. There's no way a family of four can live on that amount. But you know, even if you're earning $15 an hour at a job, that only translates into about $30,000 a year. And our calculation is that for a family of four, you really need to be really out of risk of falling into poverty. You need to be around, or you need to be better than 200% of the federal poverty level. In other words, 46,000. So a lot of people who are living a very, very subsistence, edgy existence in terms of their finances are, they're working. They're working more than one job. They're working two or three jobs to be able to get their income up to that level, up into the 40,000. So unemployment is much better than it was right after 2008 when the recession started, and it's back to closer to what is a normal number. But it does mask a much bigger problem, which is this significant part of the population that's living at or near poverty.
Are there other numbers that we need to pay attention to, a better way to measure this problem, and what criteria do you use to define poverty?
Well, we commissioned a study in 2012. Excuse me. The Urban Institute did that study, and it gave us a lot of data. And it led us to the conclusion that the most effective measure is 200% of the official federal poverty level, which hasn't been adjusted in many, many years.
And why is that?
Well, they can't even adjust the minimum wage. I mean, I don't think anybody thinks a minimum wage of $7 plus an hour bears any relationship to current reality. But they're not able to adjust that. And unfortunately, with both the minimum wage and with the poverty level, they haven't put a cost of living adjuster in it so that it's adjusting itself year by year. That's one of the hopes that we have in terms of eventual legislation to try to correct that. But
better data would lead to better possible solutions.
Well, better data will lead to a better understanding on the part of most people of how significant an issue that this is. But it really has become a very significant American issue. And I'm happy to say that what I see is that both on the national level and the regional level, people are really paying attention to it. They're talking about it. They're concerned about it. They don't want to live in a country that has such a multi-stratified society.
So what are the possible solutions in order to... Let's just look at the income gap itself. It's growing. It hasn't been this large since before FDR. And yet nobody seems to have a way of addressing it. If that's the problem, how do you address that?
Well, there's no one silver bullet. Right. There's a whole bunch of different ways that it has to be addressed. You know, one of the current topics is the minimum wage, and it's not getting addressed at the federal level, but it is being addressed state by state by state. Over half of the states in the United States now have raised the minimum wage state by state. It's under consideration in Pennsylvania. I think there are three or four bills, maybe more than that, in the state legislature. They won't get to them till the current budget impasse is done, which I hope will be very, very soon. But they will eventually get to them. I favor looking at a minimum wage of something like $15 an hour. And again, at that level, you still can't support a family of four in any meaningful way. You still are going to have to work multiple jobs, or both partners are going to have to be working at least one job or multiple jobs. So that's one way to address it. But then I think there's a bunch of other programs that you can look at. And one of the most important things to recognize is people think, well, oh, the answer to the issue of poverty or the issue of income disparity is jobs. Yes, that's part of the answer. But in Pittsburgh, we have a lot of jobs that are in existence, you know, that are out there right now, but not a lot of people who are prepared and ready to take those jobs. So you have to look at the context of poverty. You have to look at the context of the lives that people are leading and all the barriers to full employment for them. Some of it can be education, some of it's transportation, it's childcare, some of it is cultural. People who were raised in neighborhoods and families where they didn't learn about, you know, what it takes to show up at a job, be part of a work team, all that sort of a thing. So there's a variety of programs that can go into getting people ready for employment. But there are also a lot of other social issues to look at. Juvenile criminal justice is a really important issue to look at. So at the Pittsburgh Foundation, we're trying to focus on two or three things right now that can make a significant difference. And the way we're doing it is trying to focus on populations. What are the populations we think where there's a real opportunity to help? And if you want, I can mention a couple of those populations. One is single-parent families that are headed by women. Here's an astonishing data point to me. In Allegheny County, 70% of the single-parent families headed by women are at or near poverty, by our definition of poverty. They're struggling to make ends meet. And when you think about it, you can see why. If you're a single woman trying to work a couple of jobs, take care of kids, get them to school, get them to other programs,
feed them and all that,
it's almost impossible. So that's a population we really want to focus on and see if there are ways in which we can help them as parents and help them as job seekers or employees. Another population is youth at risk, kids who are 11, 12, 13, 14 years old. They may be getting in trouble at school. They may begin to get in trouble with the law, with the police, and get into the juvenile justice court system. And what do they need to help them reframe things so that they don't go down that pipeline to prison? So we're looking at key populations and what kind of programs we can develop to help those populations.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is Maxwell King. He is president of the Pittsburgh Foundation, and we're talking about poverty in Western Pennsylvania. And it's on the rise, particularly in counties surrounding Pittsburgh. And we'll look at the breakdown of that coming up. Also, if you would like to join the conversation, 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Again, 412-246-2002. We'd like to hear from you about the situation that you may be in. You may be part of a struggling family or the head of a struggling family. What is happening? What is your first-person story that you can share with us about what's going on out there? And we may have some ideas or solutions in the discussion. 412-246-2002 is the number to call. And where in the region are we seeing the biggest pockets of poverty? It's not just right in Pittsburgh.
No, I think traditionally we've thought of poverty as existing primarily in the city, but in fact, it's been moving out of the city. What's happening in the city is that the population in the city stabilized, beginning to grow a little bit with younger people, millennials and retirees, and a lot of the neighborhoods are becoming gentrified that used to be pockets of poverty, and people who are poor are moving to the inner suburbs. So actually, 60% of the poverty in this region is outside the city. And, you know, we used to think of it as primarily in the city, but it's also growing in the outlying counties. Beaver County, Westmoreland County, significant rises in poverty.
Because people aren't finding affordable housing in the city, because we're seeing places like Lawrenceville where you could buy a modest home for under $20,000.
Not anymore.
No, certainly not anymore.
No.
So these people are moving out, and that's why we're seeing Beaver County, Westmoreland County with increasing poverty rates.
Yeah, I think it's more affordable, that they find it more affordable. There are also frequently jobs available for them out there that aren't available in the city. But it's really become a regional issue. Well, as I said earlier, mm-hmm. it's a national issue. But its emanation here is regional, not just in the city.
412-246-2002, the number to call to join our conversation with Maxwell King. And we have Anne Louise in Oakland on the line. Hi, Anne Louise. How are you?
Good. How are you today?
Good, thank you. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say that if we've been listening to Robert Reich for the last 20 years, we wouldn't need to keep doing studies to find out how bad it is. We could have started creating solutions a long time ago. I was looking at a little house in Garfield, and I'm afraid to buy it because there are only four or five of them in the middle of this Tony developing community, and I'm concerned they're going to declare eminent domain and take them away. People have been forced out of affordable housing on Penn Avenue. And all that's being built now are these micro units that start at $1,000 to $1,200 a month.
Well, you're certainly pointing out.
The further move from work, if they have work, the more it costs them to get there and the less time they have with their families.
Another good point. Those are all good points, Anne Louise. So I'm going to let Maxwell King respond here.
Well, I'd start out by saying we have been listening to Robert Reich. In fact, that's one of the reasons that we're focused on this issue at the Pittsburgh Foundation. We've been listening to people like him and Robert Putnam, the Harvard social scientist who just came out with a new book called Our Kids, which focuses on the lack of opportunity for people in the bottom two quintiles in terms of income in America. So we're listening to them, and we're trying to listen to them in terms of what may be some of the solutions. What I would also say, though, is you're right about the gentrification being a significant issue for Pittsburgh. It's good news in terms of the larger economy that real estate is recovering, that neighborhoods are recovering, but we don't want to have that change the texture of the city and have it become monolithic in terms of the kinds of people who live and work here. You're also right that significant affordable housing was lost on Penn Avenue. But I think the good news is that Mayor Bill Peduto is really focused on this, paying attention to it, and he's very committed to seeing that the city of Pittsburgh, as it develops a variety of new real estate ventures and approaches, is continuing to develop affordable housing. And we're committed at the Pittsburgh Foundation to work with him on that.
What do you think of his idea? We were talking about, you know, the $15 minimum wage, which is as high a minimum wage as anybody's pushing in the country right now. It's higher than what President Obama has advocated, the 10-10. So I realize that it may not be the panacea, but the fact that our mayor is pushing for that, our governor's also pushing for that, is that going to help?
Well, I think it would make a significant difference. I think if we got to a level of a $15 an hour minimum wage and had a cost of living adjuster in there, I think it would make a really significant difference for a lot of families. Now, the corollary question is, what would it do to employment? Would we lose jobs? There have been a lot of studies done recently to suggest that there would not be a severe job loss associated with that. And it was one of the rationales, by the way, that Walmart used in raising their average employee's pay to, I think, around $15.
So we're learning that that argument that businesses can't afford to pay that doesn't necessarily hold water.
Yeah, I wouldn't dismiss it entirely. I wouldn't say that there'd be no impact, but I think that the impact could be manageable and also could be offset by the fact that suddenly you have a working class with a lot more money in their pockets, and people who are low income tend to spend that money. They really don't have the option to save as much as people who are higher income. So I think that there are ways in which that could balance out, and increasingly there are a lot of people who support that.
Let's go to Judy in McDonald. Judy, you are on with Maxwell King.
Hello. I don't work for Walmart or McDonald's. I work for a small family business, basically a couple who started a business. I make $9 an hour. I see how much this business takes in. They cannot afford to pay me $15 an hour. If you raise the minimum wage, I will be out of work. I'm almost 50 years old. I'm too old to go back to school and retrain to work in another field. I just want to keep doing the job I'm doing until I retire. Thank you.
Well, I think you make such a good point, and it's why I don't just completely dismiss this argument that's a significant factor. I think it has to be managed, and you know, I doubt that we would get a $15 minimum wage in Pennsylvania anyway. We're more likely to get something around $10, and I don't think that's quite adequate. I know that Hillary Clinton is advocating a $12 minimum wage. But I take your point very, very seriously. And I think people are in a situation like you. We have to be very careful in what we do.
Thank you for that call, Judy. Let's go to Brendan in Shadyside. Brendan, you are on Essential Pittsburgh. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm an artist by trade, and I subsist on a lot of part-time work. And I've found that through applying for employment to places like Lowe's or Home Depot, that these are huge corporations that offer their part-time workers wages that are effectively less than the minimum wage that a lot of people are seeking, say, whether it be $12 or $15 an hour. And I think that, like, how much pressure can we place on huge companies like this to actually affect larger introductory wages for people that are trying to make, you know, part-time living?
Well, it's a great question, Brendan, and it kind of is a contrast to what Judy's talking about. She works for a small business that she says could not afford to pay $15 an hour. Brendan's pointing out another aspect of this, which is that, I mean, these these big box stores, they are large corporations that presumably are taking care of the people that are running the company, running the corporation, but not necessarily their rank and file employees. So to Brendan's point, if you raise the minimum wage, is there a way to do it so that the smaller businesses aren't affected or can get around it, maybe have a loophole that that the bigger stores, the bigger businesses would not?
I've heard that proposed by some people. I don't know if it's part of any of the legislation under consideration in Harrisburg right now. I think the danger with loopholes is that lots and lots of people, many of them unexpected, find ways to exploit loopholes. That's what worries me about there being a loophole. But, you know, Brendan asked about how do we influence these large companies. And I think as important as a change in the law that politically influences them is how they're influenced by the culture, both the business culture, to wit Walmart saying we're going to pay our employees more because we think it's better for us as well as better for society, but then also the general culture. I think that if shoppers at these stores made known to the stores, both by what they say and by what they do, where they shop, that they really are uncomfortable shopping at a place that pays somebody $8 an hour or $9 an hour, that can have a significant impact. I think there's a bit of a tide here moving in that direction. And the question is, can it be moved as much by popular opinion and other businesses as it can by the political process?
Let's go to Linda in New Kensington. Hi, Linda. You are on with Maxwell King.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello, Linda. You're on the air.
Okay. I'm not from New Kensington, but I live there now, and I work with a after-school program in the heart of the city where lots of low-income families live, and quite frankly, they can't get to the jobs. I ask that there be a social responsibility of these corporate heads to move their businesses into cities where train tracks are, highways are, for the people to be able to get to the work.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. Transportation is one of the most significant issues we run into when we're working with nonprofits that try to help the disadvantaged and the poor. Transportation, I'd say transportation and childcare are the two biggest issues. And, you know, it's a factor. You mentioned New Kensington. It's a real factor in terms of poverty moving out of the city, because in the city, we've got a pretty good network of transportation, even though it's been reduced in the last 10 to 15 years in some significant ways. But when you get further out into suburban areas and suburban communities, there's much less public transportation. And it's one of the things that we're trying to get a handle on and figure out, particularly as it relates to that population I mentioned that we're very focused on right now, which is single-parent families headed by women. Transportation is a big issue for a lot of those women, and for those who live outside the city, it's an even bigger issue.
Let's take one more call from Joseph, who is here on the South Side. Hi, Joseph. You're on with Maxwell King.
Yeah, I hear a lot of people talking about affordable housing, but exactly how many affordable housing units have been built in the last couple of years? It seems to me that you would need about between 9,000 and 10,000 affordable housing units even to put a dent in the housing shortage in Pittsburgh.
I think you've got a really good number there, Joseph. I think that it's at least that number. And there's been we've lost some affordable housing in a whole bunch of neighborhoods in Pittsburgh and some of the suburbs recently, and there hasn't been as much built recently. But again, I take a lot of comfort from this city administration and the county administration, which are both focused on this issue and very committed to seeing that as new housing is built in Pittsburgh and the surrounding areas, and there's a lot of new housing being built right now, that a significant percentage of it is affordable housing.
Thank you for that call, Joseph. Just a couple of quick last questions before we wrap this up. I want to go back to what you were talking about earlier about people not getting the training they need for the jobs that are available. What are the jobs that are out there, and what needs to be done to make people ready to fill these jobs?
Well, there are a lot of service jobs out there, and they don't pay very well. But there are also some good construction and good union jobs in manufacturing. Even though we lost so much manufacturing over the last 40 years, there's still a pretty significant manufacturing industry here in Western Pennsylvania, and there's a fair number of jobs. Now, some of the training that they need relates to the specific skills of the job. They need training to be a welder or to install electrical systems or something like that. But equally as important, I think, is training that helps them understand how you fit into a work team, how you become a productive member of a work team, how you support the mission of a large organization, how you become valuable to a large organization, how you become more valuable and eventually get promoted. Those kinds of skills are just as important. I think we've tended over the last 20 years in this region with all the loss of heavy industry to focus on training that addresses the specific skills in the jobs, and not to do as much of the training that helps people be ready for employment. So that's what we want to spend a little bit more time and attention and funding on at the Pittsburgh Foundation.
And earlier this fall, when you addressed regional power brokers about the issue of unemployment and underemployment in Western Pennsylvania, did they get the message? And if so, what are the people that can profoundly impact the situation prepared to do?
I would say that's a resounding yes in terms of their getting the message. We've had scores of meetings with other funders, nonprofits that serve the interests of the groups we're trying to help, people at the universities, with political leaders, with business leaders, with the Allegheny Conference. And I think uniformly, there's a really good recognition that not only is this a really important issue, but it's a great opportunity. After all, we're all excited by the new Pittsburgh and the renaissance that we're in the middle of now. Young people are moving here. Companies are moving here. It's very, very exciting. But it's not a success if we leave 30% of the population behind. And by the way, right now, we're leaving 30% of the population behind. But I have found a great reception on the part of everybody I've been talking to around town, a real interest in seeing that in advancing the hopes of the new Pittsburgh, we don't lose the old Pittsburgh that cares about people, make sure everybody gets an opportunity.
Maxwell King is president of the Pittsburgh Foundation. Mr. King, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Coming up, we'll hear about a new program at CCAC designed to provide education and training in healthcare professions to low-income individuals. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.